This is my first podcast, as you guys know, and I am really looking forward to this. I got so many interesting responses on Instagram with topics that people wanted me to talk about and a whole bunch of questions. But I was thinking, you know, maybe I should start off with kind of a broader topic for my first podcast, because since I'm sure I will talk a lot about feminism in the future, I just want to make sure that I cover it by explaining what feminism really is and clarifying some of the common misconceptions about the feminist movement, because I think we all know that there are so many misconceptions when it comes to feminism. And I also want to explain what we're fighting for and why feminism is still needed in today's world. Alright, so to start off, before we dive straight into why we still need feminism, let's begin by talking about some of the very common misconceptions surrounding the feminist movement. So probably the most common argument against feminism that I hear is that feminists all hate men, or that we want special privileges for being women, or, you know, all sorts of crazy things you see and hear in the media. And the thing is, our media sensationalizes things a little bit too much, trying to pass the most radical and extreme versions as the standard, which in this case depicts a feminist as a man-hater. But we have to acknowledge that in almost every group, the most radical and extreme people are the loudest, but the loudest minority certainly do not represent the entire group. So I don't think it's fair to generalize the entire feminist movement due to the loud minority. So contrary to these mainstream criticisms of feminism, feminists are not just a bunch of angry women who hate men. We don't believe that women are better than men, or that we deserve special privileges for being women. And we certainly don't think that women are always the victims in every single scenario. Regardless of what you see in the media, in order to be considered a feminist, you only really need to be on board with one idea. And that idea is that all humans, male or female, should have equal political, social, and economic rights. A feminist is someone who believes in equal rights for both men and women, and thus tries to tackle gender issues. But some of you may be thinking, what gender issues are you even talking about? Men and women are already equal, we don't need feminism anymore. And I want to touch on that a little, because a very, very common direct message that I receive on my account is, why are you a feminist? Why do we even need feminism in the 21st century? And I hope I'm able to answer why today in this podcast, because I feel like this question is not only limited to the people from my inbox on Instagram, but it's a question that a very large portion of our society genuinely wonders. And many people don't understand what the purpose of feminism is in today's world. And trust me, I somewhat get it. We do live in a world with an illusion of equality, but the reality is that we don't see a lot of injustice that still goes on out of sight of the public, and we don't hear the stories that are not covered by the mainstream media. So often we're not even aware of the loopholes that still exist in our system today. So therefore, you know, many people think that it's safe to assume that we already live in a perfect world and that we don't need any more improvements. But when you really dig in, what you find is not perfection, but rather unnoticed flaws, issues, and loopholes in our system that makes a movement such as feminism necessary in our society. One example is child marriage that, believe it or not, still happens in the world frequently, even in the United States. According to Girls Not Bride, which is a non-governmental organization that fights child marriage, more than 650 million women and over 150 million men already suffer the consequences of child marriage globally. In the United States alone, there were over 200,000 child marriages between 2000 and 2015, which is an average of almost 40 a day. In fact, child marriage is banned outright in only 2 states. But with all of that said, probably the most concerning aspect of child marriage laws in the United States is that in 23 states, which is nearly half the states in America, there is no minimum age for marriage with parental or judicial consent, which means that if both parents and a judge sign off on a marriage, a child of any age could get married in that state. A child literally as young as a 9-year-old could get married. And I have heard objections by people saying like, oh, that's not great, but as long as it's voluntary and not forceful, it really is not that big of a problem, right? But here's the catch. Child marriage survivors often say that they were forced to marry against their will, particularly if they were pregnant, to avoid the stigma of giving birth outside marriage. So according to a survey by Tahiri Justice Center, which is a legal defense organization that protects women and girls fleeing violence, forced marriage is a real problem in the United States, with as many as 3,000 known and suspected cases identified in only recent years. So, in many instances of child marriage, what is really going on is that the parents are the ones who are insisting on the marriage, or in some cases, they are forcing their kids to marry for social, cultural, religious, or even financial reasons. And of course, child marriage negatively affects both women and men, but the reason why it is such a big women's rights issue is because when you look at the age, it usually consists of a really young girl marrying a much older man, which is pretty dangerous. According to Tahiri Justice Center, of more than 200,000 children married in the United States between 2000 and 2015, about 87% were girls, and the impacts of child marriage on girls are deplorable, to say the least. It not only puts girls at a higher risk of sexual assault and physical abuse, but it also limits their education prospects, which as a result hurts their workplace competitiveness and reduces their expected earnings, and traps them in a cycle of poverty which has the potential to harm them for the rest of their life. So I want to make it clear that a lot of the statistics that I was using are from the United States, and you know, as we were talking about misconceptions earlier, most anti-feminists argue that feminism is no longer needed in the West because they assume that the Western society is already perfect as it is and that we don't face any of these problems anymore. But that could not be further from the truth. And you know, when we really dig in, what we discover is that underneath the shiny appearance of like freedom and equality, our system is actually really flawed. Now, I also want to take some time to explore other areas where feminism is still needed. So, I'm going to be talking about rape culture because, you know, I realize that this is a very controversial topic surrounding feminism, and a lot of people are skeptical of the idea of living in a rape culture. I mean, after all, we don't openly worship rapists, and a very common argument from the opposition that I hear is, well, we don't live in a rape culture because we don't treat rape as a minor offense. We shun rapists, we take them to prison, etc. But the truth is, when we look at how our criminal justice system treats rape cases, the reality is not very pleasant, at least not for rape victims. And before I explain what I mean, I just want to say that as I was researching this, I was completely shocked because, of course, I had been aware that our criminal justice system is very flawed. I mean, we have literally had cases like Brock Turner, where he raped an unconscious girl, left her behind a dumpster, and still only got 6 months in jail because the judge believed that his one mistake should not ruin his entire life, even though he literally traumatized the girl for the rest of her life, and yet she did not even receive justice. But most people seem to believe that cases like the case of Brock Turner are outliers or exceptionally rare, But is it really that rare? Because according to Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, only 5 out of every 1,000 rapes committed, which is 0.5%, ends in a felony conviction. The Washington Post puts the figure at 7 out of 1,000, but pretty much everyone agrees that it is under 1%. So part of the reason for this painfully low number is that many rapes aren't reported, but also the crime is notoriously under-investigated. And when it is investigated, it's pretty tough to prove, not necessarily because of the crime's high proof threshold or the misbelief that women don't bother to get evidence to corroborate their accusations, but in fact, it's because of how little examination is done about it by law enforcement. There is, for example, a national backlog of hundreds of thousands of untested rape kits, and behind that big number are stories of thousands of women who, rather than heal or wash or even change after being attacked, they went straight to the hospital where they had to get undressed, subject themselves to intrusive physical exams, and get interrogated, and then nothing happened. No one did anything with the evidence they offered at great personal cost. According to a CNN investigation, 25 law enforcement agencies in 14 states were found to be destroying rape kits in cases that could still be prosecuted. According to what they said, this was a routine process done to make space in the evidence rooms. But it's not just rape kits. In fact, this lack of investigation seems to be prevalent in every aspect of the system. The Minneapolis Star Tribune's review of more than 1,000 cases in Minnesota found pretty horrific things. Alright, so I'm just going to be reading off of some of the information that they published. So, in almost a quarter of the cases, records show police never assigned an investigator. In about one-third of them, the investigator never interviewed the victim. In half the cases, police failed to interview potential witnesses. And most of the cases, about 75%, including violent rapes by strangers, were never forwarded to prosecutors for criminal charges. And overall, fewer than 1 in 10 reported sexual assaults produced a conviction. And on top of that, according to CNN's report on one police department in Springfield, Missouri, what they found was that in dozens of cases, detectives did not attempt to contact witnesses or known suspects, they did not have rape kits tested, or they stopped working on cases within weeks or even days of being assigned to investigate. So you may be wondering what the reason behind such a disinclination to investigate sexual assault is, and some of it is definitely because of resource and budget constraints, but there is also the undeniable fact that prosecutors and investigators and judges are humans themselves, and their thinking and attitude toward these rape cases aren't immune to the biases about sexual assault that exist in every level of our society. For example, in its investigation about sexual assault cases over the last 10 years, the Star Tribune found that, provided that they knew their victims, only about half of the defendants convicted of felony sex assault in Minnesota got any prison time at all. Judges were reportedly twice as likely to reduce a sentence when the attacker knew the victim, and in 227 separate cases, judges reduced the sentences of men convicted of felony sex assault to less than a year behind bars. When we look at these outcomes, it seems that judges are sending a pretty clear message that is being influenced by their own biases. They are ultimately communicating that it's not as bad to rape someone you know. It's a pattern that has its roots in outdated ideas of sexual assault, like the notion that stranger rape is very serious, whereas other kinds might not really be rape at all. Our society has, after all, demonstrated skepticism when it comes to the idea that men might rape people they know. For example, marital rape was legal until quite recently. Minnesota actually had a provision that protected people from prosecution for raping their spouses, and they only just recently repealed this. And the concept of acquaintance rape is sometimes thought to be merely just some misunderstanding or the female regretting later on, and that horrific misconception in our society has led to a lot of judges treating acquaintance rape with undeservingly more leniency. And the reality of how our criminal justice system treats rape cases is an indication of the fact that we still need feminism. And like, you can call it rape culture, or you can deny that rape culture is real, you can call it something else. It doesn't matter. The truth is, this is absolutely a problem, and feminism aims to fight against it. And if I were to, you know, make out a list of more reasons why we still need feminism, I could go on forever. I could bring up the culture of victim blaming that still exists, more or less, depending on where you live, you know, and the practice of asking women what they were wearing after they come forward about being assaulted, or gender disparities in education, or the fact that our bodies are still being legislated, or the fact that female genital mutilation, the act of cutting off and restitching female genitals to prevent pleasurable sex, is still practiced in 29 countries to girls as young as 5 months old. But if I were to list out all the reasons we still need feminism, I would literally be talking for hours and hours long, because there are just so many issues worldwide that women face that still need to be addressed and fixed. And that is precisely why we need a movement that does not just accept the status quo as it is, with the mindset that everything is already perfect and that there's no more room for any more progress, but instead actually recognizes the flaws rooted in our system and the issues that go unnoticed by most of society. Because I feel like to deny social issues and to say that everything is already perfect when there are obviously still flaws in our system is being passive, and that mindset will never help us move forward as a society. So that is my reasoning to why I think we still need feminism. If at any point during this podcast you were skeptical of any of my claims or statistics that I provided, I will have all the links provided for you probably on my story. I don't really know how this app works yet, so I'll try to see if there's like a little description thing underneath my podcast where I can post all the sources. But either ways, I'll let you guys know where they are, so you guys can always, like, you know, fact check them for yourself. And yeah, we will talk next time, because that is all I have for you guys. Bye!